Hello, Ergo, and welcome back to part two of your 2014-2015 report. A few thoughts to follow up on from the ideas in the previous section before I move into some new territory. I want to stick with the Virgo Pisces thing for a moment and just add a follow-up thought or two, probably three. The phenomenon of projection in relationships is a very powerful one. To some degree, everyone has noticed this happening in their relationships, where there's some quality that you have that you perceive in someone else, and that's called projection. Or there's something that someone is doing, maybe to you, and you can see clearly that you're not doing that, they're doing that, and they are trying to project that onto you. My hunch is that the projection thing goes much deeper than this simplistic form of, oh, you're telling me what I think, but that's what you think. I think it may extend all the way down to an organic, biological level where, for example, I may perceive my femaleness in the person of a female-bodied individual. That the whole experience of this femaleness that I'm experiencing, that I want so much and that I love and that I see and all that, this may all be me projecting. I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying that it is. I have found it to be worth questioning, and I think that it may be worth questioning in general. And this may run really deep in our relationships. A Course in Miracles goes so far as to say that perception makes projection. That if we perceive, we are projecting. It is a somewhat radical viewpoint. That's the Course in Miracles for you. And I think also just worth pondering whether that might be true. In a dynamic like you have in your chart, where there is much going on in Virgo, I'm going to get to a few other bits in Virgo, and much going on in your opposite sign, there is the possibility of lots of projection, especially with Neptune present, obscuring on some level the reality of what's going on. And that projection may have a number of different effects. One is, you might think, how can I ever measure up to this person? Or this person is struggling so much, what do I do with this person? And there may be a large component of that that is projection, that you are seeing some facet of yourself that you are then given the opportunity to integrate into yourself rather than cast off. Now, I'm not suggesting that you take on what is not yours, and this gets very subtle because you have to learn discernment to do this. And as far as I can tell, it comes down to making decisions about what is yours and what is not, and having some reality check that you are being accurate in that perception. And here, by the way, is where a good therapist comes in handy to help you see what's yours and what's not. And it may take some experience. It may take recognizing that some person in a very severe state that is disruptive to your life is not something, someone, some quality that you want to have voluntarily in your world. And you may have to do something very bold, which is to make a decision based on your perception, trusting to the maximum degree that you can. And sometimes you may find yourself having to make a decision, even if you are somewhat uncertain or you have your doubts, but you are pretty sure. Now, when it comes to people with power, great knowledge, it is very easy to see them in some way as being superior, more experienced, more knowledgeable, on a higher level of evolution, all of these things. And to some extent, that temporary difference may be true. And what I would suggest here, and it's kind of the, maybe I really have come up with a kind of solution to the problem of projection, walking home from the Chinese restaurant, that the thing to do here is to not see anyone else's greater knowledge or greater skill or whatever as representing a loss of some kind within you, as representing a lack of some kind within you, that others may possess what you perceive to be greater knowledge and experience without there being a lack implied. And others may have less experience, greater struggle, less honesty or integrity, without that implying a superiority on your part. Which of those two is the more challenging to get? I'm not sure. That they're both a bit slippery, and in the end they amount to the same thing, which is banking on an inherent equality between you and every other being around you, even if that equality is what you might think of as a state of potential equality. Of Course in Miracles also mentions equality does not mean equality now, but it's suggesting the potential. And it's this potential that I think is vital to bear in mind and to be sensitive to, so that you keep your bearing in these relationships, so that you don't lose your way in these relationships and get lost in a kind of a mirror chamber of projection. And especially when there may be a teacher or therapist or healer involved, what is called transference and countertransference, to sidestep that entirely by holding open the space of potential equality and recognizing that one purpose of the relationship is to show you what you are potentially equal to, what you can be if you choose to be that thing. And so there is kind of a meta lesson in these relationships. And the meta lesson, when we go so far, is this property, this journey of integration, of recognizing that there is some part of you that you're experiencing, not merely a projection, the wiser, older part, the struggling part, whatever that might be, and that as you choose to integrate that into yourself and have whole relationships with everything in your environment, whether it's a lover, a therapist, a teacher, an animal, so-called, computer, piece of technology, a musical instrument, recognize, embrace, experience, explore the inherent connection and oneness that you have. And I think where projection is a potential issue, which it is when the first seventh axis is lit up like this. I mean, this is one of the ways that we see projection in astrology, is to be mindful of it, or the possibility of it, and then it's much easier to address. Projection, I believe the definition of projection, the psychological definition, is that it is by definition an unconscious process. And so once projection becomes conscious, it's no longer projection. It's something else. So the remedy, the antidote, the solution set, the integration point is to maintain that mindfulness. You'll be reminded again and again to come back to that. All right. I suggested that there was some exciting stuff coming through Scorpio, and the poignancy of this, the kind of the slot machine three cherry value of this, is that simultaneously on one day, August 25th, there were two really powerful conjunctions, especially for you, the Virgo new moon and Mars conjunct Saturn. Now, the Virgo moon, new moon, we know a bit about. It is the orientation point of this chart. And when that happened, Mars was just a few hours away from making an exact conjunction to Saturn in Scorpio. New moon happened at around 10:12 a.m. Eastern, and I believe the Mars-Saturn conjunction was around 3 the same afternoon. That's very close from an astronomical point of view. And so they are one chart. One event is spoken of. One concept. And the Mars-Saturn conjunction took place in your third house, Scorpio. So we count from your first house, Virgo, then comes Libra. That experimental field of self-value and self-esteem, which I cover in great detail in the Good as Gold readings. And in the third house, there is this very, not to overuse the word, intense conjunction. And by intense, I mean you've got two planets with a radically different nature, one of which is Mars, and one of which Mars is in its domicile, Scorpio. It's Mars is one of the traditional rulers of Scorpio. Modern astrologers tend to think that it's Pluto, but I think that we owe it to the classical astrologers to at least acknowledge the connection of Mars to Scorpio, because it's fruitful to do so. And this takes place in your third house, and your third house is one picture of childhood. There are a number of houses that illustrate childhood. Now, the whole chart is a picture of karma, and childhood is all over the chart. But in my estimation, houses 2, 3, 4, and 5 give us the most information about childhood. And the third house, where this takes place, is the house that is associated with everything that happened while you were still crawling around. It's what you bump into when you're crawling around. And these are profoundly formative years, because the whole time your limbic system is forming, just about, said to be till about age 2. You're an infant or a crawler or a very nascent toddler. And these are the years when you are the most susceptible to impression from your environment. And the implication of your chart is that your environment was making a very powerful impression on you, that there were forces to be reckoned with, that these were emotional forces, that they were at times somewhat base. There may have been an element of primal reality, an element of cruelty. There was some profound impression made on you by the sexual nature of the people around you. Many children, if not all children, are very sensitive to this, and there was something encoded through that environment into your emotional nature that is coming up for review in these years recently, since Saturn ingressed Scorpio, probably about 18, 19 months ago, and then the conjunction of Mars to Saturn in Scorpio really may have stirred the pot on some profound childhood environmental circumstance. Some secret may have been revealed. The secret feelings of people may have been revealed. A power dynamic is certainly worth examining. And the upshot of this is that you managed, then as now, to break free. But you did not break free without having picked up some element of your environment and taking it with you. And so the implication is that while you may not yet be entirely free, you are working on it, and the presence of Saturn in your third house and soon to be fourth house is describing the ways in which it would be very helpful to clear the waters, to clear out that emotional body, starting with making contact with the feelings that are involved and getting some understanding of who exactly these dominating influences were. Now, there is another dynamic going on where there is a whole hidden piece of this experience that you may slowly unravel. And the hidden piece looks like a profoundly protective element. And it is well within the realm of possibility that whatever it is I'm describing, whatever this function of the environment is, you will ultimately decide, this is a proposal, it's also a proposed image of what healing looks like, that whatever happened to you was the perfect thing to happen, because without that thing having happened, you would not be you. And so maybe it would be possible to have a slightly more pleasant childhood experience, or to have subtracted that element, that thing that shaped you in some way. Were you to do that, you know that you would not be the person that you are. And these can be weird things that, you know, that happen. I mean, I live with celiac, and I was diagnosed very young, so there was a very high awareness of food around me. And while nobody wants to have a chronic disease or a sensitivity to something that is in easily, you know, three quarters of everything considered edible, the benefit of that is this level of consciousness, and then a wide variety of dietary benefits, like I get to not eat out of deep fryers for the most part, unless I really know what's going on in that deep fryer. So I'm spared that, just to give an example. That's healthy, better. A gift has come from that. Bruce Springsteen, who I'll be talking about soon because his birthday is coming up, was born into a family where in his parents' generation there was a lost sibling. So he was, for his grandparents, who lost the sibling in a car accident when she was very young, he became this kind of replacement, and she loomed over him like some ghost from the past. And you consider what Bruce Springsteen became and the message that he delivered, it's almost like you can feel that sensation of that lost child that was projected onto him with some determination by his grandparents, who had a lot of contact with him. And so there's something that was weird about his background. There was a death that occurred many years before he was born, and that followed him into his generation, into his mind. And yet, would he have been the artist that he became, the human that he became, without that? You can only speculate, but I think not. And so in searching through your own life, you can look for not the silver lining, but the essential quality of what is given to you through all of these circumstances that are extant. And anything from that viewpoint can become a gift, a tool of liberation. There's other elements in Scorpio. I really could go on for about a week reading this chart, and I'm going to run plenty over time, but we'll do my best to be as succinct as I can be. There's something about tracing your mom's emotional history through her mother. So if you want a place to bark up the tree, look up your maternal lineage and follow the line of women. I'm seeing this, and you may, you know, get a clue off of this, that in Scorpio, in addition, there's the conjunction of Ceres and Vesta. And Ceres always points up the maternal lineage, and Vesta, well, also is a kind of a matriarchy because of the lineage of the Vestal Virgins, which was a tradition maintained by women and passed down for many generations of women. It was a kind of a mystery school of social function and service, as well as kind of a concealed whole thing going on within the walls of the temple that no one really knows much about. And so there's matrilineage involved in this, and you know, it may be as simple as, and as complex as, what do they pass down to you about sex? What information? What was true and what wasn't true? What pain, in particular, with Ceres, was passed on? And how did that affect your ability to receive and give nourishment through sexual experience? Now, one gorgeous thing about this conjunction of Mars and Saturn is that it is in a very close trine aspect to Chiron in Pisces. And so there is something here that can be resolved through communication. My hunch is that because the trine is to Chiron, and Chiron is likely to represent a teacher, we're not talking about communication or processing within what you might think of as a romantic relationship, but rather communication within a therapeutic relationship that holds the key to unraveling this and opens up something for you going forward in a big way. And that something looks like your ability to have faith in yourself. Now, the challenges of your relationships in these past years have, it looks to me, challenged your ability to have faith in yourself and your faith in yourself as a partner or lover or spouse, because there are indications that there have been a good few disruptions. And depending on how far back you want to contemplate this, we could go all the way back to the beginning of Uranus in Pisces, which goes back a full 10 years, and consider the story. But I would propose to you that the challenges in the past 3 years have become more meaningful, more useful, and more accessible. They are less like this remote thing kind of floating around the atmosphere of your relationships that's completely inexplicable, which may have been the case, say, for example, 8 or 9 years ago, or a little bit less than that. And instead, there is a more synchronous quality of the right thing happening at the right time, or even the kind of wrong thing happening at the right time, then it turns into something better. And that you would benefit from remembering the type of struggle that you were in the, you know, in the 20 noughties, like the 24 through 2011 era, and noticing the distinction as Chiron became the dominant player in your relationships. And that would be approximately in April 2010. And then going forward from there, and then the next year, Uranus leaves your opposite sign. Now, one thing here is that there seems to be some real upheaval in the nature of your relationships where the contract is concerned. And I would propose something to you, which is that you want the contract that you write. You don't want the contract that you buy in the office supply store, the standard lease agreement, the standard will, the standard marriage vows. You want the lease, the marriage vows, the will, whatever it might be, that you write. And, at worst, that you collaborate on, you write in consultation with someone close to you, that you make an original work, that what gets disrupted is not you, not the relationship that you're in, but rather what gets disrupted is the pattern whereby everything that happened in the past is somehow imposed on the present and on the future, and it's a big pain in the ass, and you don't know how to get out of it. The place to take over this, the place to get out of that pattern, in a way similar to the key to the universe of unraveling projection, for example, is to not view someone else's gift as your loss. The way to get out of that pattern of the past becoming the present is to take over authorship of the present and write your own contracts, and not assume that just because you notice you have karma with someone, that that is somehow indelible in some way, that you have the ability to consider what it is and make decisions and basically get out your pencil and your eraser and do something original. And this is subversive. If anything is subversive, this is subversive. With the time remaining, I would love to speak a little bit about your professional life and your creative aspirations, which we have covered a lot about relationships, and I have full confidence that the commentary on relationships extends into certain factors of your creative life and the way that it is in a dynamic relationship to your relationships. It does not live in a vacuum. And your gifts as a craftsperson, as an artist, as a talent of some kind also does not live in a vacuum. That exists within a context of relationship as well. And I've mentioned probably in every Virgo reading that I've done the past few years that because of the placement of Gemini on your career house, you kind of have twin careers. And that the solution set to that is to get your twin careers supporting one another rather than competing with one another. Indeed, it would be wise to get everything around you supporting one another rather than competing one another. One of the bits of wisdom from Tantra is that a powerful woman has around her men in harmony. Powerful man has around him women in harmony. This is one of the modes of integration, claiming back projection, and seeing your environment as part of yourself. That harmony around you is your strength. And in a similar way, this seemingly split career is ready-made for there to be an element of harmony in that. Real harmony, symbiosis, the thing where these seemingly different opposing forces are unified into one idea which has more than one mode of expression. And that's what the two careers are. They're modes of expression of the same thing, and you don't need to feel weird if you're a belly dancer part of your time and like a construction engineer the other part of your time. There used to be this guy, High Heel Neil. He may still be findable on the internet. And he was a salvage guy. He was a salvage contractor. If there was like a ship that sank and somebody wanted to recover the treasure from the ship, the treasure being, you know, whatever it might be down there, you'd hire High Heel Neil to do this. And it's a very manly kind of a thing with, you know, guys in suits and millions of dollars changing hands. And High Heel Neil's called that because he would wear a men's business suit on top, and he would wear a skirt and stockings and high heels on the bottom. He wasn't gay. He didn't even consider himself a transvestite. He said he just thought it was fun. And he would always dress like this among all these super macho guys. And he, this was such a brilliant article because it so conveyed the way in which he had this thing that he liked to do, but rather than hiding it, rather than concealing it from the world, and rather than having it serve in his life as a point of tension and conflict, he just kept it out in the open where everyone could see it. He was very well regarded in his profession, could do a fantastic job. He just had this thing. He liked to wear high heels and stockings and a skirt with, you know, a fine men's jacket and tie and button-down shirt. And in this way, I mean, I've seen lots of people, and God knows I've got a couple of careers that seemingly conflict, investigative reporter, astrologer. That was kind of weird at the beginning with some people because it was the whole thing of like, oh, you used to be such a good reporter and now you've become a fraud kind of thing. People project that stuff on you and think about it and like, am I a fraud? No, I'm definitely not a fraud. I'm just as sincere. And when I hear from people and they say what they do, well, I'm a this and I'm a that. I'm really a this, but I'm also really a that. Or this is what I do here and this is what I do there. And what I would suggest is that you practice having no sense of conflict about the different things that you offer the world. They are coming from the same exact place, which is you, your calling, your soul's mission. And for you, part of this integration work of making the two into one, or the many into one, or the two harmonizing perfectly well together, is this thing about gathering your mission and really getting that you're not split in any way, but that you have points of emphasis, that you have gifts, and the gifts don't conflict. I mean, yeah, you know, if you have a dangerous hobby, like making bombs, you might want to make sure that you practice that hobby. Well, if you make fireworks, let's say skip the bombs, and you like to make fireworks, you know, you might want to have an outbuilding for that special task, but it still can be, you know, on your property. There is a, well, there's a planet moving through this house, moving through very slowly, and it's really quite a beautiful world. It, I believe, is the fifth name Centaur, Asbolus, A-S-B-O-L-U-S. And it describes two things. One is it describes the ways as a child that we adapted extreme survival skills. And so I would note the ways in which this multifaceted quality that you have is a survival adaptation. Deeper into the story of Asbolus, we get to that level of what all living things have in common. And I think that is the truly profound level, the gift of this point, Asbolus, whose name means carbon dust, which I think is a beautiful illustration of what all life on Earth has in common. It's all carbon-based. We wouldn't be able to get up and walk without a carbohydrate in our bodies becoming heat and calories to create thought and locomotion. And so the struggle quality that no doubt, based on reading of your third house, Scorpio, was imparted in childhood need not be debilitating in any way. That you can go to a much deeper level of your cellular roots, you might say. And instead of projecting off one side or saying, you know, I am that, but I'm not that, or I'm this today, but I'm not that today, I'm that today, but I'm not this today, in terms of working with those alternatives, that you give yourself space to be very comfortable being who you are in terms of these seeming differences, and that you aim to fully embody the essence of everything that you present, or even better, that you play with this direct experience of everything you do being a projection of, extension of, offering of the essence of who you truly are inside. And this is, to my thinking, the true picture of the integrity that you seek, the integrity that is so, well, integral, valuable, precious. The thing that you want is to be in full possession of your integrity. Don't say this lightly. This is not true for everyone. Because you know that it is your strength, and that you are by far stronger in contact with your integrity than when you are not embodying that, and that the divisions that you have lived, including the seeming divisions of mission and the seeming divisions of self versus other, these huge crisis points on Earth, wherever you may go, very similar issues facing civilizations, factions within those civilizations, and individual people. And for you, the way through that, the so satisfying process of healing is embodied in integrity. And you don't need to push this hard. And I would remind you that the way to integrity is not to criticize yourself. That part of what is so beautiful about the people who you witness, be they people who come to you for help or to whom you go for help, or some mix, is that they all show you a wider idea of who you are than you might be naturally inclined to have. They are in your life to help you open your mind to what is possible and to what is true about you. All right, my dear. I will sleep on all of this and resume in the morning with some astrology afterthoughts and by the beautiful James Wanless, the Voyager Tarot. So there's some pictures of that spread, and we'll see what the cards have to say about all of this. Thanks for listening. A pleasure and an honor to work with you and to work for you. Bye for now.